These guys survived the David Kahn era of Timberwolves basketball and live to tell about it. It's Flagrant Howls.
Future so bright, Kyle. Future so bright.
I don't want anyone to see my eyes right now.
I thought it was the Jim Pete stunt. Future so bright, gotta wear shades. No, it's the stayed out till 4 in the morning in Phoenix celebrating a future sweep shades. That's what we're rocking here.
This is we're coming to you live from downtown Phoenix this morning. This is the second pod in 5 or 6 hours. My roommate, you might have heard of him, Dane Moore, is a really good friend. He woke up, he didn't wake up. He just got on a plane at 4 a.m. to fly to Chicago to celebrate a friend's wedding. So
So he's celebrating a wedding tonight in Chicago and then a funeral tomorrow night in Phoenix, right?
Yeah, and I have all black. I have a black polo, black pants, black shoes, black hat. Not one surprising one. So what a game, man. What a time, what a week for Minnesota sports. You saw a team that's been painted as, you know, inappropriate, unprofessional, immature at times, young, whatever. They came in last night, and for a Phoenix Suns team that had their backs against the wall, on the ropes, most pivotal game of this big threes era for Phoenix, and the Wolves led from the beginning tip to the final buzzer, all 48 minutes. Statement win from a franchise that continues to make more and more statements this season.
I think it warrants a little something here on my soundbar, if I may, Kyle. Wolves back, my friend. So where do you want to start, man? Like, this is wonking out on me here. Hopefully the Wolves don't wonk out with a 3-0 series lead. But you were in the arena last night. You were in the post game, so you got the vibe from pre-in-game and post. I will say, just watching on TV, it felt, even though they tried this weird, like, purple out thing, like, they kind of tried to match, like, the Target Center vibe, but it was very much like Diet Target Center, a bunch of fake fans, as John Krasinski called them last night, a glass jaw team. But it did feel like the crowd and the team tried to bring a little fight, a little energy early. It felt like Bradley Beal and Devin Booker were looking for a fight in the paint, bringing shoulders to defenders, knocking Mike Conley down. And then the Suns had to call timeout like 5 minutes into the game because they were down 15-7. And then the air was just out of the arena until like a little mini spurt in the fourth quarter. That's what it felt like watching on TV.
Yeah, there was a good energy, I thought, around the arena. Anytime a team is down 2-0, we always say, you know, the series doesn't start till the home team loses. So I think the Suns came in with a little glimmer of hope. Like, hey, if we can get one kind of reset, you know, all regular season, the Wolves were so on their heels because the Suns were just throwing jabs and just pushing them back and back and back. It's kind of what Minnesota did in games 1 and 2. So you thought, okay, maybe the Suns come out firing. They did. Bradley Beal hit a 3, like, first possession of the game, and he was amped. And it's kind of been my biggest takeaway of being at these 3 games. Game 1, which was Wolves desperation mode. Game 2, don't lose home court. And then game 3, like, series, season, franchise, Matt Ishbia on the line, is that the Wolves took all these punches, and every time I looked up, like, they were ahead.
Yeah, I know. That's the crazy thing, dude.
Like, yes. The first quarter last night was wild. The Suns, I think, attempted 15 free throws. They were, to their credit, and Finch said this post-game to us, they were fouls. Like, the Suns were just kind of dictating the level of physicality and all that stuff. And then you just kind of 24 minutes into the basketball game, look at the scoreboard, and the Wolves are up 6. And it's like, if you're a Suns team, it felt little brotherish. Like, it just felt like, what else can we do to try to get over these guys? And they had no answers.
Yeah. Well, I'm trying to find the tweet here. Our guy Jack Borman from Canis Hoopus was putting out some great math. Like, just like
math.
The nerdiest, like, basketball math. And I love it, dude. Like, he's on top of this. And he cited... He cited a story from earlier in the series here that, like, came to fruition in front of our eyes. And I'll spare, like, the stats here. But basically, the Wolves defense has baited the entire series. The Suns, who are a great three-point shooting team percentage-wise, the Wolves defense has baited them into taking long twos or even, like, mid-range twos. And a lot of these are contested, by the way. I mean, how many times has Kevin Durant, like, from 18 feet, 15 feet, 20 feet, risen up with Karl-Anthony Towns' hand just square in his face, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So they're making it hard, but they're basically just tricking the Suns into a math equation that can't possibly work for them in this series. Go ahead, take these twos. Like, you can even make the twos. Go ahead, like, Kevin, Bradley, Devin, go ahead, make your little Chris Paul elbow jumpers. That's fine. Because at the end of the series, the math can't work unless you are perfect with those long twos. And, like, when he tweeted that out, I started watching a little bit more closely. Like, yes, this is amazing. They're running the Suns off the three-point line or baiting them in. Hey, it's a nice little cozy area here for you to jump up and take a 18-foot jumper and maybe even cash it. You can feel good about yourself, and you're still down by seven because you suck at math.
Phenomenal observation from Jack. Jack Borman, legend, does a great job at Canis Hoopas, and all those guys do. But he's right. And then one of my favorite stats to look at after these games, because the Suns are mid-range assassins, and that's where Kevin Durant makes his money, and that's where Devin Booker loves to cook, is
congrats.
The Wolves took 11 more shot attempts last night than the Suns. If you're getting outshot attempted and you're not even taking the most valuable shots on the court, you have to kind of play flawless basketball. And again, to the Suns' credit, they only had 9 turnovers last night, I think, but they were out-rebounded 50-28. And the Wolves had 15 offensive rebounds, which every time, you know, not to get too nerdy, but when you get an offensive rebound, that's just getting another possession.
Yeah.
And when you get 15 extra possessions, it just wears on a team. And then, you know, Krasinski and I were both kind of on this. Hands up. I might know a little ball, Phil. They do have a glass jaw, and they don't have the depth. So the Grayson Allen injury last night when he was ruled out before the game was a bummer, because you want to see your opponent, you know, be at full strength. But they just didn't really have answers. They went to Bol Bol, and I think the second quarter a little bit, he gave the arena a spark. But
Okogie came in.
Okogie was good. Yeah, Okogie was good. I would be shocked if they don't just lean into Okogie in game four and try to play as small as possible. And Vogel started to make some adjustments, especially Kevin Durant at the five, got away from Nurkic, got away from Eubanks, and that gave them a little problems. But Dane and I did a pretty lengthy pod after the game, and I kind of want your opinion on this too, because it was the big conversation the last couple weeks of the regular season when reintegrating Carl. I thought Carl last night was awesome again. Those four fouls we can talk about, but in the first quarter and third quarter, his teammates, his coach, they all said we needed that. I mean, he came out cooking.
Yeah.
And when they went small, the Suns, and they had KD at the five, that's just trouble for Carl and for Kyle and for Nas. And what Finch did was he just pulled Carl out of the rotation. He just sat him down. And after the game, Carl in the locker room was like, yeah, that's cool. That's what we should have done. I just want to win games. So just a big boy moment from a team that is kind of parlaying more and more of these big boy moments together. And again, you don't want to get too ahead of your skis after game one or two or even three. I know no team has come back, but you just don't really know what the Suns can do. And if the Wolves are this locked in and this focused, but what do you do if you're Frank Vogel?
It is okay. There's like
I know. Let's just do four hours of Flagrant House today.
And the series isn't even over yet, but there's like five side streets here. And trust me, we will get to an Anthony Edwards side street. We've had countless listeners sending tweets. I saw some emails this morning. They want us to re-rank the players in the series now after three games, because we did it before the series. They're like, well, Anthony, so it's probably Durant and Booker, and Ant needs to prove, and we will get there. But you bring up Carl, and on one hand, it is frustrating that he just continues to find himself in foul trouble. And I know that, you know, he protests some of the calls. Like, a lot of it's self-inflicted. You know, you got to find a way to not. But I will say, like, in these games, when he hasn't been on the bench in foul trouble, he's been great. Mm-hmm. He's been rebounding. You know, last night he knocked down some big shots. He had 5 huge offensive rebounds in that game. And, you know, he's being tasked with a really just crappy defensive assignment where they're saying for most of the series, hey, man, we're just going to stick you on Kevin Durant one-on-one. We're not really going to run a double at him. We're kind of fine with him. In fact, part of us baiting the Suns into the math problem is just letting you guard Kevin Durant, him thinking he can take you in the mid-range, and him just, like, shooting twos.
Yep.
But Carl's over there just making every shot hard. Here's just a 7-foot hand in your face and a closeout where you got to be careful about your ankles, right? Because there's these big Carl Anthony Towns feet coming at you. But I think, as a guy who's been really hard on him over the years, and I think a lot of it's warranted, aside from some of the foul trouble, his attitude's been great. He hasn't, because sometimes in the last 2 years, he'll get into foul trouble or like some things will spiral the wrong way. And then he's just shipwrecking the team for 2.5 hours. In this case, okay, he goes and sits down for like a half hour, comes back, and he's dialed in, and he's grabbing offensive rebounds. So just like shout out to Kat for integrating in, for making an impact, drawing a really crappy defensive assignment, doing a good job with it, and making sure that Kevin Durant doesn't go God mode in the series.
18 points, 13 rebounds, 5 offensive rebounds. Yes, he had 4 fouls. Mike Conley had 5. Jaden had 5. Rudy even picked up 2 early ones, you know, where
Nikhil,
he had to go to the bench.
Nikhil almost fouled out last night.
Yeah, everyone. It was a next man up thing. But the one stat that really stood out to me was 1 turnover. And that kind of sums up this whole Cat integration thing.
Do you remember the turnover, by the way?
No.
It was a classic Cat turnover. He goes, he dribbles in the lane, and like, and it's like he's such a unicorn that he can make this pass. Like he tried to like thread a behind the back pass through 2 defenders to like Rudy or somebody in the paint, and it like didn't work.
Yeah, I was
and there
sandwiched.
Was a fast break the right way, the other way.
Sandwiched by Britt and Britt Robson and Dane Moore, and I don't think Britt loved that one either. But we all agreed, though, again, that play aside, that he just. If nothing else, you got to kind of take my word on it, right? I'm down here. I was in the locker room pre and post. There was no pouting. That was a cool thing. Again, it's the concern was, okay, they got to reintegrate Carl back into this rotation. The rotation's, it's figured it out. Nas is plugged into the 4. All this good stuff. What happens if it goes south a little bit? Will Finch have, and we need to talk about Chris Finch at some point, will Finch have the stones to just sit a guy if it's better for the team?
Yeah.
And he did it last night, and the guy he sat was down with it, and that's why they were able to close that thing out. And 2, you make a really good point about this is – Dane keeps saying this isn't a Carl series. It's really not a power forward series for the Minnesota Timberwolves because Kyle Anderson has not been good.
Yeah.
I don't think, as much as he's a legend, I don't think Naz Reid has been that good, and Carl hasn't been good because they all are kind of stuck in, well, on defense we got to guard Durant, and we're going to lose that matchup. And if they go small, then we're kind of thrown into a weird, we got to get on the perimeter a little more type thing. So just not a series for them. But, yeah, knock on wood, if they make it to the next round, all 3 of those guys might be the biggest X factor. You're going to need Carl and Kyle and Nas because you're going to have to throw as many guys at Nikola Jokic as possible. So shout out to Carl. I thought he did play really well last night coming off of a kind of a mediocre game 2. He kind of rebounded in game 3, literally.
Before we get to the Anthony Edwards conversation, so I had ranked before the regular season was over, before they played the last game against the Suns, I had ranked the 9 Western Conference playoff and play-in teams, not the Timberwolves, they're the 10th team, in order of like 1 being the hardest and the team that you'd rather avoid, all the way down to like the Kings, bring on the Kings. And I had the Suns number 1.
And I had the Suns.
You had You had the Suns 4th.
Okay.
But that was before game 82, where the Suns absolutely blew the doors off the Wolves. And I kind of did a victory lap on our next Flagrant House. I was like, hey, listen, Kyle mocked me for putting the Suns number 1. But, I mean, you were right, dude. This team, whether it was the Wolves just brilliantly holding back some adjustments, knowing that they were likely to face the Suns. And like, so then if you look at the 3 games, then the first game was a schedule loss. It was a back-to-back, like the travel situation was a disaster. The second game was a legit just a bad game. It was like 97-87. It was their worst offensive game of the year. But now that you look at it, like the 3rd game, the Wolves just literally said, we're not showing anything. We're just going to, hey, if we win, but we're not going to show you anything. So it's great that they've evened the season series now, 3 games apiece. Game 7 tomorrow is going to be wild for the season series between these teams. But you were right about the Suns.
Oh, thank you.
I was wrong putting the Suns number 1.
I just, you know, and the reason the Suns actually looked good last night, I was rewatching a little bit of it this morning, at least the first half, is they played like they played at their peak in the regular season. They were moving the ball around. They were kind of playing a Finchian offense to an extent. Like, they were really making the extra pass, really spreading people out, kind of creating driving lanes once they started to do that and hit some shots. They love to take 3s. And then, yeah, just the Wolves, after they saw that, and again, that punch and that mentality, they just made adjustments. I mean, again, man, maybe now or later. Jim Pete and Britt Robson are 2 of, like, my legends and my idols, and they have covered this team or been around this team for as long as I've been alive. And it is no disrespect whatsoever to the past or the legends of the past, but Chris Finch is the best coach this team has ever had.
You know, when Jim Pete said that on our podcast, like, halfway through the year, and I think, like, both of us were like, whoa.
Yeah.
What? Flip Saunders? And Jim Pete loves Flip Saunders.
Yeah, he loves him.
And even, like, some of the audience who heard that, I was reading the YouTube comments and some emails and stuff, like, whoa, Jim, like, that's, what's, the thought was, does Jim have a beef with Flip? Why would he say such a thing about Flip? And it wasn't about Flip Saunders, it was about Chris Finch. And we're seeing it, dude. Like, to your point about it's not really a power forward series for the Wolves, the fact that it's not really a power forward series for the Wolves and they have blown the doors off the Suns in all three of these games is an incredible testament to coaching and matchups and adjustments.
And this team has a lot of personalities, right? Like, that Rudy Gobert thing, he comes from Utah, and last year he probably wants to make a statement or be like, hey, I'm Rudy Gobert. And that not ego. Ego sounds negative, but you kind of got to ride with me here. Anthony Edwards, like, big ego, right? Carl has had his history. You have all these other guys, like, Jaden can kind of combust, and Naz Reid, just, you know, you can't criticize Chris Finch for not calling timeouts or something and then not also give him credit when his undrafted, you know, center becomes sixth man of the year. Or Anthony Edwards has played 92% of his career for Chris Finch, yeah, and he's a super-duper star. So the player development, the player relations, and again, I'm very privileged and very blessed. I got my credential here, Score North, so thank you and Judd and Dane for letting me be out here. But you got to see how those guys interact with him pregame, talk about him postgame. They're all on a string, and that string is led by Chris Finch. He is just an incredible leader, manages the personality as well. And I also think, too, now X's and O's, he's calling timeouts at the right time. He's not letting runs get away from him.
Yeah.
They're running some more structure, but that structure is then kind of leading to more flow. And he's just getting guys to buy in. Again, this team historically famously lost to the Grizzlies a couple years ago because they just couldn't rebound. A lot of the guys on that team are still here, Carl and Naz and Jaden. And now they're just rebounding better. He's getting his guys to just play defense on the perimeter for Anthony Edwards played the whole second half last night.
Yeah,
and
43 minutes, dude.
And Ant credited that week off to Finchie was putting me in football drills, and he had me going double teams, triple teams, quadruple teams. So I'm just really proud of Chris Finch. And then just to kind of put a bow on it, I don't have the audio, but again, I tweeted this out. And this is important for you and I to talk about because we talk about the history on this pod. Someone from The Athletic last night basically just asked Finchie, hey, you know, you're starting to have some success, but it's been like 30 years of decades of futility, as Glenn Taylor calls it. You know, what's going on? And I've been in a lot of Finch pressers. He's always a cool cucumber. He looked that man in the eye and said, I don't care about that stuff. I wasn't here for 26 of those years. We don't care about that stuff. We're living in the current. And it was about, you know, they got to close the series out. Again, knock on wood. But if they do, to me, that's the moment that we stop with the Charlie Brown analogies and we stop with the PTSD. Because Chris Finch came out and told you, he hears, like, we don't care. Joe Smith, David Kahn, Steph Curry, Wesley John, like, none of that stuff matters to what we're trying to do this season. And I think that was kind of a pivotal moment for me as a fan, just to be like, you know what, he's right. Like, stop worrying about the past, enjoy the moment. Because this moment, this team, this 22-year-old kid, it's kind of life-changing.
That was one of the most mature, systematically dominant performances I have seen. I mean, we've seen some stuff in the finals, obviously. You've seen the Kobe's and there's like a finals level of domination, but it's hard to find a game of any superstar in the playoffs where you're getting doubled almost every possession and you make the right pass every time. He had one foul in 43 minutes, despite being out on the perimeter guarding some of these guys all game. 36 points, 9 rebounds, 5 assists, defensive clamps, 11 of 11 from the free throw line, and most of those were like down the stretch,
close
the game out free throws. Nothing but net on every single one of them. I have an exercise that I want to run through with you, but just you being in the arena, being in the post game, what was your number one Anthony Edwards observation last night?
Oh, you kind of put me up. Well, my number one thing, because we've talked about it on this pod before, is that the Suns are making a run in the fourth. They try going small. They're trying to just inject any life they can into that arena. And this 22-year-old kid who hugs Mike Conley after games and puts on a big smile and you know, is fun and does all the funny zooms and says all this funny stuff, had this look in his eye of, as he said to Scott Van Pelt postgame, I want to kill everything in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
And after he had killed everything in front of him, I had a direct line, and that man at 22, who does not know, Jace Frederick asked him about 90s wrestling, just started doing the suck it chant. And just all alone in his own half of the court, after throwing an awesome outlet pass to Rudy Gobert.
Well, Triple H would be proud.
It was it was incredible. And it's what I love about Anthony Edwards. I was always concerned when he came in, Phil, at 19, that he was going to get, like, PR'd to death and that he would lose some of his personality. Not like Wolf's PR, but just in general of, like, hey, you know, don't say sound clicky things. He has this youthfulness and this jovialness as a 22-year-old that makes him such a guy that can create a culture. They love him in that locker room. They would take a bullet for him. But then also, too, he doesn't smile when there's moments to not smile. He just goes at his idol. He goes at the guy that, you know, everyone thinks is going to start for Team USA at shooting guard in Devin Booker. He goes at Bradley Beal. I mean, him and Bradley Beal, man, are going at it every single possession. He's picking his guys up. He's asking to do post-game stuff with Rudy Gobert. It's just, you know, it's really incredible. And from a Minnesota sports fan thing, you know, I was thinking about this with, like, the Vikings draft. It's rare that you just get to watch, like, a player, or I still call him a kid, like, grow up in front of your eyes. We've all watched this kid since he got to Minnesota back in 2020. Yeah. And every time we expect him to, you know, hit a double, he hits a triple. And it's just incredible. And the sky is kind of the limit. He buys into what Finch does. Finch coaches him hard. Finch said that after the game. He's like, these guys let me coach him. And I thought that is, like, the ultimate respect when you're talking about your players, is that they, you know, make millions and millions and millions of dollars, way more than the coach, and they let Finch get hard on him. So he was incredible. His energy is intoxicating. And being at the arena last night, Phil, to answer your question, I think he won over a lot of Suns fans. Like, that's cool. Like, no. I think Phoenix people went back to their very nice places in Scottsdale last night and were like, I wish we had him.
They were like
I'd trade everything for him.
And that's kind of a segue into my biggest takeaway. You know how Nick Wright from like Fox Sports 1, he's a huge NBA guy. Great hair. Yeah. Hot takes, great hair is how I would describe Nick Wright.
What is that's Dairy Queen. Hot eats, cool treats.
We treat you right. Yeah. So Nick Wright has something that he updates every year called Club Superstar, where I believe there's 12 superstars in the Superstar Club, and only 12.
Yep.
And every single year, the 13th, 14th, 15th are lined up outside Club Superstar, and then there's like the penthouse level that's LeBron and Steph Curry, and then like maybe Luka Doncic jumped into the second level a couple years ago. But there can only be 12 in. So if you're going to put someone in the club, you have to take someone out of the club. The capacity is 12. And I was thinking about Nick Wright's Club Superstar last night. Or if you want to think about like 12, 13, 14 players on a ranking ladder. And it was like Anthony Edwards last night in Phoenix blew past the security at the door, blew past the bouncer, kicked the door open, grabbed Kevin Durant and Devin Booker by the shirt collar, shoved them out of Club Superstar and said, I'm in here now, boys.
And then got out.
That's what we watched last night.
And then got bottle service of mimosas.
Yeah.
That's where I'm headed. it's a great analogy. I have nothing else to add. He really has, you know, that's, people always say, do it in the playoffs. He's doing it in the playoffs, and he's doing it, you know, it was a week ago. I have all the receipts, and I always wait until the final buzzer, but if they close this thing out on Sunday, you might as well unfollow me, because it's going to be 100 tweets of all the different people that said, you know, this is a bad matchup. He's the third or fourth best player in the series. He continues to get better. He continues, you know, after the game I asked Rudy, what's the biggest difference? I was thinking about this, Phil, when you said he had 5 assists. That was the worst stat of the night. I think that stat is misleading, because I think he had 8 hockey assists getting off the ball and then it leading to another pass. But I asked Rudy, you know, what's the biggest change this year compared to last year? And Rudy just, without even thinking, is like his playmaking. And that's how you get, playmaking is the password at Club Superstar to get from the bottom floor to the top floor. It's, can you make everyone else around you better? And that was the question we had all year, was how much can Ant develop and grow and mature on the fly to only be 22? You know, Shea wasn't doing this at 22. And he's done it in spades, and he's done it against some of his biggest idols and some of the guys that had comfy chairs in Club Superstar. So what's his ceiling? I don't know. I mean, his ceiling is best player in the league now if he continues to grow and mature and watch more film and trust his teammates. But
yeah,
he is the catalyst of what is becoming the most special season for me as a fan because of my age, and I wasn't old enough to do podcasts as a 10-year-old. So
yeah,
it's incredible stuff, and he was awesome last night. And then, yeah, to pivot from a killer mentality where he's staring down Bradley Beal to pretending he's Triple H at half court, he is the total package.
So here's the exercise real quick, because people want us to do the rank the players in the series. I mean, I think it'd be more fun just to rank.
Nikhil 2, Nikhil 3.
Exactly. I think it'd be more fun to rank the current players in the NBA by this metric.
Oh, wow. Okay.
How many players... I'm just going to start throwing players out. How many players would you say are definitively better than the version of Anthony Edwards we are seeing in the playoffs right now?
And we're throwing out contracts. We're just going straight up, put this guy on the court for one
just
game.
On the court right now. It's the middle of the playoffs. Roll the ball out. Who wants to rock and roll? All right,
let's do it.
So I'll start with, in no particular order here, by the way. I'm not starting like at the top of the NBA, but I want to start with Kevin Durant.
Ant.
It's Ant for me.
It's not, and it's Kevin Durant's one of my five favorite players, not this season, of all time. But age matters, injury history matters, and also, and I've watched Kevin Durant as closely as anyone these last three games. I don't know if it's an youth or an age thing or whatever. He doesn't have that youthful jovialness. Like, he doesn't have that connecting gene right now. He never lifts up his teammates.
He's never had it. He's always been this incredible mercenary.
Like him and Ant both had five assists last night. I thought Ant should have had 13. I thought KD had one. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I think KD played 42 minutes in game two and only had two assists. He's still a killer. Mm-hmm. If he gets ISO'd on someone, he can go right, left, right and pull up and get a shot whenever he wants. But he is not making everyone else around him better and lifting up. You know, you can't say Nikhil Alexander-Walker has a 10 out of 10 confidence and not think how much of that is Ant building him up. Same with Carl, same with Nas, same with Rudy. So KD, Ant.
Devin Booker.
Ant. Hey, man.
Booker's got some weird energy. Booker has a little, like... There's like I wouldn't say it's loser energy, but there's like a tantrum sort of a bad, weird vibe that he puts out when things aren't going right. I feel like when things aren't going right, Anthony Edwards still has a winning vibe up about him. And I'm having a hard time even like putting that into context, but you either sense it or you don't. And I just feel like Anthony Edwards has a different vibe about him than Devin Booker. And you're seeing it in this series.
We're a year removed from the Suns. Right, getting eliminated by the Mavs when they were down 40 at home. That just kind of goes back to the glass jaw, you know, how thick is your soul thing. So I've been a Booker guy. Just, I don't know, I thought he was a cool player. But it's been a really bad series for like his Q score. He, even last night when he got into it again with Jaden and then kind of was in like downward dog with his left leg and almost trips Carl, which could have been pretty nasty. It's just there's a lot of little cheap shots. I mean, I don't know if it's just because Grayson Allen's out and he thought he had to take the throne, but
it's weird.
He's clearly frustrated, and I get it, because anytime Jaden's on him and he gets a screen and he gets switched, now Nikhil's there or now Ant's there, there's no easy matchup for him. But, I mean, you look at, again, in a night that it was a pivotal game, he took 15 shots. He should have taken 30. Like, this is your city, they say. This is your team, and... Yeah, that one's not even close to me.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Bill Simmons said it. We love Bill Simmons every now and then. Ant snatched the chain for Team USA, like not just from Devin
the starting
Booker.
The starting two guard. Yeah.
But also, here's a little fun thing. Look at who else is on that team that's like the star-studded team. It's the Steph Curry, LeBron James, Kevin Durant, Devin Booker. All those guys might combine for one playoff win. Kawhi Leonard. But they're all going to be the faces of this thing, right? They're all going to be like, these are the legends. This is the dream team part three or whatever. Write this down. Anthony Edwards is probably going to be the best player on that team. And Anthony Edwards, by the time we get to that, and this sounds hot take-ish, but again, we thought it was hot take-ish when we said he's going to be the best player on the last Team USA thing. And he told Steve Kerr very quickly, we don't have a Kobe. I don't need to be Dwayne Wade. I need to be Kobe on this team. And he was, so.
Yeah, he like demanded to be in this, not in a disrespectful way, but he. But
how he
and then he
himself.
Led the team in scoring. Yeah. Okay. I think we can for sure say Jokic. Right. You want to fight
Jokic,
me on like definitively
Jokic,
better than Ant on the pecking order. Jokic. Giannis is hurt. Giannis. I'm gonna put Giannis.
Yeah. Yeah. At full strength. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Giannis. Luka. Tough not to put Luka up there.
You know, Ant's ability to defend when he needs to. I think Luka's gotten a little better this series, but
playmaking though.
Yeah, playmaking again. There's nothing wrong with saying I like, you know, mimosas and coffee. I just think coffee is a little more important today, and I think that's the same for Luka. I think Luka gives just by a head nod.
Okay, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. 30 points a game. You know, five and a half rebounds, six assists. We see it. He's efficient. He's in a very efficient. He's like a 55% field goal guy. I don't know. The defense from Ant.
I'm gonna. And by the way, Shai is super underrated. Like we underrate him.
Ant's a better shooter.
Yeah, like we kind of did Denver last year. Yeah. And Shai's really good defensively, by the way. Like he stays in front of his guy. Yeah. I know steals aren't a be all end all, but he gets a lot of steals. I'm just gonna go with Ant. Just think Shai is a really special, unique player, but with draft season upon us in the NFL, Ant is really built like a running back. Like he really is. And I think that physicality in a playoff series, this isn't the regular season anymore. You don't just get to stroll into OKC or whatever, have them stroll into your place. The physicality is like the biggest takeaway for me being on the road and seeing these games in person. It really does wear on you. Like if things are going bad and you're getting beaten up, your soul does start to leave your body a little bit like a cartoon. So I want the guy that is built like your classic prototypical running back in Ant. So give me Ant over Shai.
Okay. I'm going to give you I'm very 50-50 on that. So your opinion tilts it. But again, this is who is definitively better than Anthony Edwards right now. Playoff Anthony Edwards. I'll give you a bin of names. Tell me if any of them are definitively better. Jason Tatum, Jalen Brunson, Joel Embiid, Steph Curry, LeBron James, Anthony Davis.
Oh, God. So many people listening to this are going to aggregate this, and then 2 weeks later
LeBron,
when they're wrong and I'm
LeBron's
right again, I'm going to...
40...
You know, Jason Tatum's got such a good NBA body, like at 6'9 and long, and I think his defense is super underrated. He rebounds well. I might give him the slight nod. Jason Tatum is really good. Like
he hasn't won the championship yet, but he's been through some battles.
Been there. Again, that's if your Ant, the Luka thing is a little harder to pinpoint because I think Luka's more in that Jokic sphere, not because they're international players or anything, just the way that they can dominate a whole game. But if your Ant, I think this series, again, you got to close it out, but you've kind of crossed off. What movie is that? Billy Madison, when he's got that list of guys, he starts crossing them off. Devin Booker. He's crossed off Kevin Durant. I think Jason Tatum is the next name on that list. Everyone else you listed in that bin, I mean, in a one game playoff, you're not going to take Joel Embiid as good as he is over Anthony Edwards. Because for some of the stuff we ripped Carl about, you got to start to be concerned a little bit about some stray voltage from Joel Embiid. I mean,
he has
really flirted with getting kicked out of games and done some really nasty stuff.
There's a little bit of, again, I hate to say loser energy, but there's just a little bit of take your ball and go home. Things aren't going my way, so I'm going to show you how much pain I'm in. He loves to over-exaggerate. It's like, dude, a lot of guys are feeling pain right now. We get it. Like, he loves to sort of over-exaggerate how hard this is. Well, we're down by 8 now. I'm going to walk up the court so you know how tired I am. Like that type of energy, I don't think that's it.
And, you know, if you go track this, we used to track Neverminds on this pod. I think Ant's A's are down. He gets fouled a lot. Like last time he drove on the right side, threw that thing off the glass, fell down a little bit. He does get fouled a lot, and he does kind of look up and do the hand thing.
Yeah.
But one of the big points of emphasis last night, pre or post game, talking to Mike Conley, talking to Finchie, talking to Rudy, was that they're all on him to just, he even brought up like Deshaun Nix and Monty Morris, like they're all on him to just stop doing that. Like we don't have time for that. And he did it a couple times last night. way less than he did in the regular season. But when he was stopped to complain, the Suns would get out in transition and score. So I think that's the next learning curve when you talk about Joel Embiid. He's just trying to get rid of some of that stuff. He's like, you know what, just play, put my head down. Finch, you will have my back. These other guys will have my back. So give me Ant over, like I said, all those guys, but maybe Tatum.
So we're basically, we're kind of in lockstep, and maybe I missed a few names here, like Kyrie, like there's some names we could throw out there, but that we're like the version of Ant that we're seeing in the playoffs, to sum this exercise up, is a fringe top five player in the NBA. And he can maybe solidify it, clinch Suns, dude, and we'll spend, if once they clinch, we can do the whole like Nuggets preview thing, but dude, this is headed for an epic round two clash between these two teams, and we could, again, we can save that conversation, but oh my god, inject it straight into my veins.
And you know what's funny is being at the game last night, obviously, and watching him do all this stuff, you knew in the moment like Ant's playing pretty well, but I don't know, I wasn't like, this is gonna sound so champagne problems, I didn't really come away in the moment when the buzzer rang as like Ant was awesome. I was like, oh, he played, you know, pretty well. And then, like, you get the box score handed to you, and it's like he had 36, 9 rebounds, 5 assists, 2 steals. And, like, one of the big things we wanted from him all year, to get to that Tatum, to get to that next level, you talked about Luka and Kyrie and all these guys. Those guys just get easy points by getting to the line. Mm-hmm. 11 for 11 from the free throw line. And to me, Phil, the biggest sign of growth, I said this to Dane, when things got sticky this regular season, especially in the first 50 or 60 games when it got really sticky and they had blown a big lead that they had, Finch would, after made baskets for the opponent, make sure they inbounded it to Mike Conley because he was the adult.
Yeah.
Every possession last night, from my memory, every possession in the fourth quarter when it got a little hairy and the Suns would hit a three to try to come back, Mike Conley would inbound the ball to Ant. And it would all get out of the way, and Ant would have to go one-on-one against the Kogi. I mean, one-on-two, one-on-three, one-on-four, and find the right matchup, and he did it every single time, and it's just...
You can see his eyes are lighting up because it's he loves the challenge of, ooh, what's the right decision to make here?
Mm-hmm.
And you can even see, like, when these plays sort of start taking shape, and he dribbles baseline, defender comes in to prevent something at the rim, and his eyes lighting up for a wide open pass to Nikhil in the corner or Jaden in the corner, right? It's like he knows as soon as the ball leaves his hand, I solved the riddle on this possession. Whether it goes in or not, I might get the assist, I might not. But I think he's taking pride in solving these puzzles every time down the floor.
That was one of my two favorite plays. You actually literally just mentioned one play where he drove kind of down the middle on the left side. Rudy's by the rim, so there's a lot of commotion. And Ant goes underneath the rim, and I know... Everyone listening to this knows, because you've watched all the games, rookie year, sophomore year, junior year, Ant would have tried to contort his body to spin that thing off the glass coming underneath.
Fall to the ground, fast break the other way.
And instead, he got underneath the rim, saw Nikhil in the corner, knew Nikhil was kind of cooking, threw it to him. Nikhil's wide open, hits a three. And I think Grady said it's raining in the desert, which shout out to that. That's just beautiful. So he gets it, and there's a lot of talk in 2020, the draft, about does he love basketball and stuff. The best thing for me is watching him. He is wired so differently. Again, I said he can have a big smile on his face and then do an interview and say, I want to kill everything in front of me. He just really, he loves basketball. I think we've buried that narrative, but he really seems to love learning and like getting better. Like he talked about last night that he just loves watching film. And I know he didn't watch film as a rookie because he was 19 years old. He didn't really know why would I watch more basketball? So he's figuring it out. And if he's going to continue to figure out more and more and unlock new levels of this video game, then he's no different than Luka. He's no different than Jokic. And those guys are at the top, right? They're on the penthouse level of club superstars. So he's ascending on that level.
Oh, man. Okay, I know we said we're going to do 30. We're at 40
here.
I got
all day, man.
I have one more question for you here. Very important question from last night's game. Did Rudy travel?
I mean, he moonwalked from Scottsdale to Peoria for sure, but...
someone put it like a Zapruder film out of why he didn't travel.
Oh, for real?
If you look at it, I can't remember who put it out. If you look at it, he took like two giant steps. It was like one dribble and like a couple giant steps, but as he picked up his dribble, his foot was hitting the floor, and then he took the two giant steps afterward, even though it looked clunky. I think it was a travel. But it was much less of a travel than people thought when they watched it and complained on Twitter.
He's so good. I know we don't want to go all day on this, but we didn't. I want to just say, like, Nickeil Alexander-Walker was brilliant again. He's a plus 65 in these three games. I don't quite, like, you want to talk about math?
Yeah.
If you really dive into that number, it's like, why would he never be on the court? And he's not, like, to be plus 65, a team high plus 65, and to also not start is just really incredible.
Yeah.
But Rudy, too, he's just, he had so many contests last night, Phil, that when Devin Booker or Bradley Beal did break through that first wall of coverage, and they're probably thinking, like, oh, sigh of relief, here we go. Nope, there's Rudy Gobert. And on offense, he was great. He had four offensive rebounds to Carl's five. Just timely tips. And I think that stuff, too, like that weird, I mean, he is now 3-for-3 in this playoff series of hilarious moments. He had that fadeaway jumper that was an and one in game one.
Yeah.
He went coast to coast in game two, and then he went coast to coast last night. He just, you know, I don't know what to put to it, or I don't know who did it. You know this better than I do, that professional athletes in this modern era don't even really run their social accounts and stuff, but I'd be hard-pressed to not think about a year ago at this time when the Wolves were down 3-0, they steal game four. They get a gentleman's sweep in game four and then lose in five. There's weird stuff about, like, ripping the Rudy Gobert trade and Ants IG liking some of the comments and stuff. And just to see, like I've always said, like, look how far we've come, friends. To see those two sitting together last night wanting to do their post-game media together.
Yeah.
To see Ant throw that outlet pass to Rudy and then post-game be like, I was trying to get Rudy to do the chant too. And then Rudy's like, well, I was concussed because he got whacked by Josh Boogie. They've become kind of like brothers. And yeah, they're the two best players on this team. And they're two of the best players in the league. You know, if we want to re-rank players in this series, I saw Udonis Haslem say that for the Wolves to win a playoff series, they're going to have to limit Rudy Gobert's minutes. He's second in minutes on the team. You can't get him off the court.
How about that? Yeah. The narrative's gone from he gets played off the court against smaller lineups to you got to be careful not overusing Rudy for too many minutes in these key playoff games.
And he's shooting, you know, the big one, too. He's shooting 86% from the free throw line on, I think, 8 attempts a game. But they're, you know, they do a Chick-fil-A thing down here, too. I was kind of hoping for a free sandwich. But
oh, he made it a sweat there with that. Yeah, he missed the first free throw.
He did. Yeah. So everyone on this roster has been good. And the guys that have struggled a little bit have embraced, you know, Kyle, for example, has embraced just letting Finch do what he's got to do. So this is about as locked in of a team, and I can remember the comparisons to 03-04 are still crazy. I don't know if you saw this, but Ant matched Kevin Garnett for most 30-point playoff games in franchise history at 7. Ant's 22. Probably going to get a couple more of those.
And KG tweeted during the game, at Anthony Edwards, all capital letters, break every record.
Yeah, that's when I started getting – that's when I put the glasses on, because I was like, I'm not going to cry on Media Row again. Just it's cool stuff. It's a really cool roster. It's a really cool organization being here. They got the right people in there. I saw Mark Lowry last night. He was looking good. He was excited. So from top to bottom, it's a pretty cool story. And I think you'll get a kick out of this. But to kind of close it down on my end, in the locker room pregame, in the locker room postgame, big whiteboards in those visitor locker rooms, the Wolves just have in big red pen on the whiteboard the number 13. Because back to what Finch said about the PTSD and the history, they're not trying to just win a series. For me, that'd be great. For us, we'd probably say it's a successful season.
Mm-hmm.
But 13 is how many more games they need to win to get Mark, Alex, and Glenn on stage grabbing a trophy.
Yeah.
That's what they're trying to do. That's the number they keep referencing. That's the only number they care about, is 13 more wins. And that just tells you how locked in this group of guys is.
Yep. So, man, we'll see. Close it out, and then we can have the Nuggets conversation. There's also a really interesting Mavericks team that's lurking on the other side of the bracket, potentially, that could be fun. My last thing for you, Mike Conley and Nickeil Alexander-Walker combined for a plus 40 last night, 7 made threes, while D'Angelo Russell is checking his phone somewhere in Iceland.
Listen, I just don't – we've talked about this before. I just don't really like in-game tweeting. So I'm not going to do in-series celebrations. until this thing is closed out. Again, we asked Ant, did you take their soul out of their body? And he said, no, not until we win four games in the playoff series. So TBD, put a pin in that. But I just want you to know that Twitter or X, whatever, does have that bookmark feature. And I have a lot of bookmarks. And we're just going to go through bookmarks the next time we record if this team has closed out the Suns, because there's a lot of bad things said about a lot of people on this team. And if we're going to keep saying you don't know ball, next pod might just be called You Don't Know Ball.
You don't know ball. That's a great, we should start a new podcast. You don't know ball. And it's not us like talking about the current events. It's us just reading vindictive tweets toward us.
They said two bigs couldn't play together. They said they gave up too much for Rudy Gobert.
Don't know ball.
Yeah. Remember, by the way, they said they gave up too much for Rudy Gobert. The Wolves gave up more for Rudy Gobert than the Suns gave up for Kevin Durant. Yeah, because Rudy Gobert is more important.
And by the way, I think it might have been me, actually, when we were doing a podcast. And I remember making a point to you. I said, if you look at like analytics and you look at their ages, would you rather have Rudy Gobert for the next 4 years or Kevin Durant for the same draft pick compensation and players? And I said, I think I'd rather have Gobert. And that looked like a terrible take for the first 12 months. But I mean, Durant's 35. Rudy Gobert's playing some of the best basketball of his life.
Yep.
Not being played off the court. So, yeah, dude.
Well, another analytics stat. It's a shorter flight from Phoenix, Arizona to Cabo than it is from Phoenix, Arizona to Minneapolis. So I think one of those locker rooms knows that. And they got to close it out. The Wolves got to go home anyway, but I think there's a little extra motivation with that 13 and with the fact that they know how important that week off was to kind of get their minds right, get their bodies right, and reload. And again, this isn't about beating the Suns. No one on this team is worried about beating the Suns in terms of that being their crowning achievement. They're trying to win a title. We're not comfortable with that. We don't really know what that means, but they know what lies ahead, and I think they know that in order to do what they want to do, it's not just closing out and getting Phoenix, it's resting, it's getting ready, strategizing, because to be the best, you got to beat the best, and the best is still out there for them. So Sunday night, get ready, game 4. Yeah, I'll be dressed in all black.
Let's go. I'll be wearing a Degeneration X late 90s suck it shirt from my couch. So he's Kyle Tighe. Go get some brunch somewhere in the go to Old Town Scottsdale for a little Bloody Mary today.
I know we're not allowed to talk about alcoholic beverages on this, but I'm going to be face down in a pool of mimosas here in an hour. So
no, we're definitely allowed to talk about alcoholic beverages.
Text me later to make sure that I'm alive.
There he is, Kyle Tighe, reporting from Phoenix. Phil Mackey here from the Flagrant Howls official studios. And this is a Timberwolves lifestyle podcast.